something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances. Whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, listener mail. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and it's Monday, the day of the week we read back some messages from the mailbag, supplied to us by our loyal mailbot, Carney, here. Right at the top of today's episode, I wanted to feature a correction by our listener, Dory. And usually if a correction comes in, we try to put that near the top. Dorian's response was in reference to the odometer episode, where I did indeed do a major geometrical screw up. So Dorian pointed out that it's in the part of the episode where I'm discussing the odometer described by Vitruvius. And I, for some reason, I said that the formula for the circumference of a circle is pi r squared. That is not correct. That is actually for the area of a circle. Circumference is 2 pi r. Though, as a weird coincidence, since we were talking about a wheel specifically with the radius of 2 feet, the different formulas gave the exact same answer in this one case, which is 12.56. So thank you, Dorian, for pointing that out. Always appreciate people letting us know if a mistake like that gets through. And I did listen back. There was a way to snip that little reference out of the episode. So the episode should be corrected now.
All right, this next one comes to us from Ben. Hey, guys. Someone else may have already mentioned this, but it occurred to me that one factor in the accuracy of the beamatists who measured distances by counting paces would have been the inclines in a route to be measured, as one's pace length would naturally shorten when walking up or down a steep incline. Perhaps they took this into account and counted uphill or downhill paces separately? Anyways, a fascinating episode. Thanks, Ben.
I did not think about that at all, but yeah, that's a very good point. Now, this is referencing the idea of Alexander the Great's bimetists and other bimetists from the ancient world, people who were said to measure distances by pacing. There was some suggestion that because they came up with distance measurements between milestones or cities that are actually quite accurate, even as measured today. There was some suggestion that maybe some of these people actually used an odometer or some type of machine that we don't know about. And that's possible. It's possible they just were able to keep an accurate count of paces for some reason. I guess we don't really know. But yeah, this is one thing that would certainly affect pacing that would, I think, not affect a mechanical odometer is the incline that you're walking up or down.
Hmm. I guess, and that would be a problem even if they were to say, and this is ridiculous, of course, if they were to use some twine to tie their ankles together and always do maximum stride.
Oh, well, now that's a good point. But I guess when you're going up or down, a lot of times the distance between your feet is not...
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Oh, the twine thing is a good idea. I didn't think about that. If you want to regularize your pace, yeah.
But then what do you do if wild animal attacks or the enemy shows up to assault the caravan? It's like, oh, sorry, measurement dudes. Your best defense is just to fall over at this point.
I mean, even then, I think if you're like stepping up or down on an incline, that might make a difference. Though if it's like, I don't know, if you're talking about trying to like, I don't know, scramble up or down over rocks or something, that would also be something that a wheeled odometer couldn't really go over, right?
Right.
All right, I think maybe we should mention some responses to the episodes on paragraphs. Now, one of the things we talked about in that episode was we asked listeners to send in their favorite examples of paragraphs or favorite opening paragraphs from literature. I guess with an eye toward selections that are not just a chunk of text that you like, but one where the paragraph boundaries, like the actual placement of the line breaks, feel like especially strong or significant choices. And I thought one great submission came from our listener, Anna. Anna begins by selecting the book Jane Eyre, great choice, and giving some background on its themes and composition. I'm going to pick up a couple of paragraphs in here. Anna writes, "The book was very popular, but there was also a fair bit of criticism from people who did not like the fact that there was a story about a girl who had her own mind and spoke up for herself. Charlotte Bronte, who was writing under the name Currer Bell, hit back at critics in the preface to her second edition, quote, 'I mean the timorous or carping few who doubt the tendency of such books as Jane Eyre, in whose eyes whatever is unusual is wrong.' She goes on to say that conventionality is not morality, self-righteousness is not religion. Those are pretty strong words, especially considering it was hard to get a book published in those days. The fact that the book had a second edition within a year of its first publishing is a testament to its popularity. Anyway, I could go on and on about how much I like this book, but instead I will reproduce my favorite paragraph." And note that this is going to be a scene between the protagonist, Jane, and her brooding, forbidden love interest, her employer, Mr. Rochester. Now, on to the quote, which begins first with a line of dialogue and then a separate second paragraph. This is Mr. Rochester speaking. "You examine me, Miss Eyre," said he. "Do you think me handsome?" And then line break. "I should, if I had deliberated, have replied to this question by something conventionally vague and polite, but the answer somehow slipped from my tongue before I was aware. No, sir." Anna goes on, "This is so relatable, and I really think you could put a scene like this in a modern movie, and people would think it was great. I think this would be a good quote to put on the back of the book to give readers a feeling for what the book is like. One of the things about Jane is that she speaks the truth, even when it gets her in trouble. Something we now call speaking truth to power. It's also an indication of the relationship between Jane Eyre and Mr. Rochester. She never knows where she sits with Mr. Rochester. Is he trying to be funny? Is he rude and vain? Does she reply no, sir, because she actually thinks he is not handsome, or because it is such a rude question to ask? You have to keep reading to find out. It's the sort of paragraph that you read and you immediately have to know what happens next. Thanks, Anna." Anna, I agree. I really like that as a paragraph. It is a wonderful little compact unit.
I don't think I've ever read Jane Eyre, or if I did, I did it for school and forgot all of it. I don't think I've seen any of the movies, so I'm having to like glance real quick and see like, okay, well, who played Mr. Rochester in movie adaptations? Looks like William Hurt played him once.
Mr. Rochester is one of the famous so-called Byronic heroes. You know, he's like a... Jane is obviously drawn to him, but he's also... You know, he's not just like straightforwardly handsome and lovely in every way. He's like brooding and dark, and he has terrible secrets. And he, in fact, in many ways could be considered quite a bad person, but also he's in some way irresistible.
Looks like Fassbender played him in an adaptation.
Yeah. I don't know if the idea of a spoiler for a book as old as Jane Eyre really comes into play, but spoiler alert, you do find out that he essentially... he already has a wife and she has gone mad and he is keeping her trapped in the attic of his house. Meanwhile, he's pursuing this relationship with Jane.
It also looks like Kieran Hines played him in an adaptation, which also makes sense. Another kind of like guy, you know, British actor with intense eyes that's really good at playing dark characters. Anyway, but I digress.
Let's see. Now, we got notes from a number, at least two, maybe three listeners, all suggesting the same opening paragraph as a favorite of theirs. Rob, do you want to pick one of these to read?
Sure. Let's see. Yeah, we heard from Anders on this. We heard from Jeff on this. Those are at least two of them. Let's see. Yeah, they both had good points to make. well, I'll start with Anders here. Hi, longtime listener, first time writer. I just listened to the paragraph part one episode, and my all-time favorite opener came to mind. I'm sure it's a favorite for many since it's quite famous. It's from Stephen King's The Gunslinger, the first book in his seven-book series, and I still distinctly remember reading it for the first time some 20 years ago. For me, it both set the tone and in a way captures exactly the plot of the book, and also it's just a really cool line. Here goes, quote, "The man in black fled across the desert, and the gunslinger followed." My guess is you'll get other emails for the same entry. Either way, I always enjoy your stuff. Keep up the good work. Greetings from Denmark. And then Jeff also wrote in, and I'm just going to read part of what Jeff said about this. He says, "We learn the protagonist, antagonist, and setting all in one line." And he also has this to say, "Thanks for the podcast. My new favorite Friday tradition is watching that week's Weird House Cinema movie if I can find it streaming anywhere."
Oh,
well, that's sweet. And yes, we heard from, I think, more than these two about that opening line from The Gunslinger, which is indeed, yeah, a great line. I definitely remember this being a line that captivated me as a young reader. And I've been meaning to reread at least just The Gunslinger at some point, because I think King went back and did an edit pass through it and sort of brought it up to speed with the later books at some point. And I don't think I've read that version of it. I think I've only read the older version of it. So I'm kind of interesting to see how things are stitched together. Not that I remember all the details from the first time, but I remember really loving that book again as a young reader in like junior high.
Hmm.
And then, of course, I read all the other ones as they came out over the years. So my reading of the Dark Tower series, like I guess most people's or a lot of people's, it's spread across the decades.
I actually do not know the Dark Tower series. I think I started reading the first book one time a long time ago, and I liked it, but I didn't finish it. That's all.
It's interesting. You know, I saw a meme to this effect recently about people bouncing on the first book. And sort of like, I think it's like the illustration is somebody digging a tunnel and they're almost to the gold or the diamonds or something, implying that the first book is kind of a slog, but then the rest of the series is the reward. And I don't know. There are many reasons to bounce off of a particular book, to stop reading it, to set it down, or to give up on it, et cetera. So, you know, you can't really find one rule for anything like this. But I remember, at least as a younger reader, really digging the first one, maybe finding the second one a bit more of a slog just because a lot of it's in the real world and is a little more less set in the fantasy, but then returns to the fantasy and so forth. And then being like all in on three. I don't know. I'm not going to go book by book, but I feel like my engagement level goes up or down depending on which book it is in the series. But in general, I was always on board for the saga. And once you've spent enough time with it in your head, you're kind of locked in.
I see. I feel like it's one of those things I'll get around to one day.
Oh yeah, it's not going anywhere. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray.
Astepro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to AstaproAllergy.com for a discount so you can get Astepro and go today. AsteproAllergy.com. Astepro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, next message about favorite paragraphs from books is from D. D says, hey there, just listen to this episode. Lots of fun, especially considering how I fell down the Pilcrow research rabbit hole about a month ago. On the topic of memorable paragraphs, your discussion made me think immediately of Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five, in which this happened. And to provide some context, I didn't look this up, but I'm pretty sure this comes in the scene where the newly arrived Allied POWs, they get to the new camp and they eat a bunch of rich soup after having eaten, I think, nothing for a long time, and it makes them sick. And so the book goes, and I'll note where the paragraph breaks are. An American near Billy wailed that he had excreted everything but his brains. Moments later, he said, there they go. There they go. He meant his brains. Paragraph break. That was I. That was me. That was the author of this book. Break. Billy reeled away from his vision of hell. He passed three Englishmen who were watching the excrement festival from a distance. They were catatonic with disgust. And then Dee goes on, I see this as one paragraph, but the middle sentence rips you so hard out of the narrative that it is deserving of a single line paragraph all its own. Thanks for the great podcast. I'm off to listen to part two now. Cheers, Dee. Dee, I agree. Ever since I read that book for the first time, that moment has stuck in my brain. I think of it often.
Huh. Yeah. I hadn't really thought about this bit from it as much. I guess I tend to come back to some of the other moments. There's a lot to stick in a young reader's head in Slaughterhouse-Five.
Yeah.
there's a lot of interesting and kind of at times, I guess, provocative content in there. But of course it's a great novel, and it does, I can't remember if this is actually the opening line of the book or if it's just the opening line of one of the early chapters, but of course it has that line, listen, Billy Pilgrim has come unstuck in time. Or Billy Pilgrim has become unstuck in time, something to that effect. But that's a great line as well. I mean, that instantly tells you, whoa, something has happened here. What's happened to Billy Pilgrim? And even the name, I guess that's an interesting thing. Like sometimes just having an insightful name for your character, that also adds to the flavor, like Billy Pilgrim. Kind of ties into the idea, you know, some of the flavor of the Children's Crusade and so forth.
Mm, yeah.
I'm sure Vonnegut junkies out there have a lot to say about it. But it's been so long since I've read it or really given it much thought.
All right. Rob, I'm going to read this very short message from Alvaro, and then maybe we'll move on to some Weird House cinema. So Alvaro writes in, with subject line, single paragraph novel. We were talking about those. And Alvaro says, greetings. I was listening to your paragraph episode and I remembered a novella that consists of a single paragraph. It's called Nocturno de Chile by Roberto Bolaño. It's pretty good, though not an easy read, as all of Bolaño's books are. Now, that was the whole message, but I looked this up. And to add to this, I think the idea of this novella being a single paragraph makes a lot of sense when you consider the contents of the book. This is the first sentence in English translation. I am dying now, but I still have many things to say. The story is actually presented as a kind of transcript of a night-long deathbed confession by a deeply morally compromised Jesuit priest who ends up getting involved with like rich people and political power players, and somehow eventually serves as a nighttime tutor for the Chilean dictator Augusto Pinochet. And so anyway, the form the book takes is like a meandering, rambling divulgence of everything this old man can think of to say before he dies. So a single paragraph somehow makes a lot of sense to me as a stylistic choice. Like, I think the whole point is that the story is not organized, but a stream of consciousness rambling as a man thinks back on through like the process of the moral corruption of his life.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. I could see where this style would fit this premise. All right, we also have some Weird House messages here. This one comes to us from Elle. Elle writes, oh my goodness, you finally watched Return to Oz. Yay, I'm so jealous. I too would like to have the experience of being rolled over by the film for the first time. I first saw it as an unassuming child, so I just sort of took the film in stride with all the other weirdness of television and film produced for children, though it be insane or dark or what have you. As a child, I felt all the same emotions, the fear, the awe, etc., at the points you described in your Weird House episode. I marveled at the visual and creative beauty of the world imagined into being by the artist, though I did not consider the creators behind the scenes at all at the time. The only difference in response would be my take on the Wheelers. Though I knew they were the bad guys and did root for the good guys in the fight scene, I absolutely loved them. I got a huge kick out of them, and they're wildly over-the-top acting. You know, it is wildly over-the-top. One of my favorite parts was when Dorothy and Belina were trapped in the locked room before discovering TikTok. Dorothy asserts that they have done nothing wrong, and the lead Wheeler says in this grand accusatory fashion, "Isn't that a stolen lunch pail? And that is that a chicken in there with you?" The absurdity of the accusation always made me laugh.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because so Dorothy has a lunch pail that she picks off of the lunch pail tree. So, yeah, I guess she doesn't know who that lunch pail tree belongs to. But yeah, the other thing is like, and you've got contraband in there. That's a chicken.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And of course, the chickens and especially chicken eggs are a great threat to the Gnome King, as we learn later in the film.
Yeah. Yeah. We have no idea why at this point it would be a problem for her to have a chicken.
L continues here, "To close, I need all of the people responsible for making this film to reunite and produce a slew of Oz films using material from Baum's many other books. I confess I haven't read more than two, but as a child, I was very much aware of the others because my brother loved them and read them all. Thanks for the great content. Sorry for sending you mail twice in 1 week. All topics are more interesting when hashed out and discussed by you two." There is something about getting to experience a movie like this as a child. And also, I have found getting to re-experience movies like this, viewing them with a child. It's been great fun to re-explore older films that of this nature with my son. And in the case of Return to Oz, see something like this for the first time and get to view it through his eyes. Though sometimes it backfires on me and he's not interested in a movie. Like I keep saying, "Hey, how about the black hole? Is it time to watch the black hole?" And he does not care. I can't get him into it. I'm like, "Look, it's got cute robots. It's got Anthony Perkins. What's possibly wrong with this?" And he's like, "No, I'm not doing it."
What, you're trying to sell him on it based on Anthony Perkins?
No, not really. I focus on the robots and the space. I'm like, it's on Disney Plus. You know, there's a good chance you're going to like it, but I can't get him interested.
This really funny image is possessing my brain now. Like the idea of somebody trying to get their, like, you know, their child to watch a movie because it's got Dan Hedaya in it, you know.
Well, I think that kind of, that does say something about the film and maybe how miscalibrated it is. Like you look at the actors in The Black Hole and it's got a number of great actors in it. I'm not going to list them all. Maybe we'll talk about it someday. But it's got a great cast. Uh-huh. But it's not necessarily cast members that are going to appeal to 10-year-olds. They're not going to look at this cast and be like, "Yeah, what are these interesting middle-aged people up to in space?"
That's to get the parents in.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Should I do this one from Richard?
Yeah, let's hear from Richard.
Okay, Richard says, "I love your regular science history episodes. You're a great team. You've held my attention with some subjects that that would have bored me in lesser hands. Kudos. I love obscure oddball films, so I greatly enjoy Weird House Cinema. You frequently note that such films are released with different cuts, different names, etc. Have you ever considered devoting an episode to this phenomenon? You could easily do 90 minutes on the how and why of that. It's got a pretty rich history from indie productions to blockbusters. Here's one I don't know if you're aware of. I'm one of the very few people who saw Hands of Steel in a theater years ago." Remember, that's the Italian Terminator ripoff that we watched.
Yep. John Saxon is in that one. George Eastman has a small role. It has Claudio Simonetti soundtrack.
Arm wrestling in scene.
Yeah. Really fun.
Richard goes on, so the movie ended before the DVD version that you reviewed. In the theatrical release, the protagonist reveals that his head is full of circuitry, then delivers the line, "Paco Querac doesn't exist. Maybe he never did." And then the music swells and the credits roll. The end. It was a memorable ending to an otherwise forgettable film. Anyway, keep up the good work. Sincerely, Richard.
Huh. Well, you know, I don't clearly remember everything that happened at the end of the film.
I could be wrong about this, but I vaguely recall it having a kind of voiceover about how, like, love can defeat evil or something after a scene where he blows up John Saxon in a factory.
Oh, and there's also something about the age of the cyborg had begun or something. Yes. Some frozen yes. text on the screen. Yeah. This is interesting. Now, I don't think we know where Richard was had viewed this film. So that's mm-hmm. one thing we always have to take into account, is that these films had different releases and different cuts in different markets, depending on, you know, who was releasing them. And then the content was cut for various reasons. Like, just because this one's fresh on my mind, Conquest, the Lucio Fulci movie that we discussed in the last couple of weeks. Like, that's one where I think some initial releases of it had cut down on some of the violence and also some of the oozing sores that make up a large chunk of the later portion of the film. So you have little things like that, and then you have alternate cuts occurring for various reasons. It is an interesting topic. It's always something that's of note when considering films. But I don't remember reading about a different ending for Hands of Steel when we were discussing it. So that's cool. All right. Well, on that note, we're going to reach the ending of this podcast episode. As always, write in. We'd love to hear from you about this episode of Listener Mail, about past episodes of Weird House Cinema and Stuff to Blow Your Mind, as well as future episodes. Just a reminder that our core episodes publish on Tuesdays and Thursdays in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed. We have Listener Mail on Mondays. We have Artifact or Monster Fact on Wednesdays. And on Fridays, we do Weird House Cinema. That's our time to set aside most serious concerns and just talk about a strange film.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.